and welcome to a very special edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is Joel A. Erickson, the podcast host you know. The new podcast host here for the first time is Nate Atkins. He is taking over. He's where Jim used to be on the Colts beat. He's been here for a couple days now. Nate, welcome.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on here. You know, as I've been kind of working on transitioning to this role, I've been listening to these podcasts, and it's like a new host every time with you on here. This has been a good crash course. And then, of course, shout out to Nat Newell, our editor, who's been stepping in after games, especially the late ones, which is not what what an editor's, you know, planning on doing. So now I'm here to kind of do that, even though we mostly have normal schedule here, 1 p.m. games. But I'm here for the long run and excited to do it.
Technically, that's Nat's fault. I told Nat that it was up to him if we did the First Impressions podcast, and he said we should do it. So he did that to himself.
It's a good soldier.
He did that to himself. Thank you again to the guest hosts that we've had. A lot of people coming in to help out. Really good to hear from the fan base, to connect with some of you guys, and just get your thoughts on the Colts. A lot of you guys have really good ideas and really good observations, and it's always good to get you guys on here to talk football and just see where you're at as the Colts go through this season. We're going to take this podcast to introduce you guys a little bit to Nate, because obviously he's going to be around here for a while, and you guys know me pretty well, but you don't know Nate. So Nate, where are you coming from?
So I just got here from Michigan. I was up covering Michigan State at the Lansing State Journal, which is a local newspaper there. And I've done that for the past 2 years. But part of that, that was kind of my two-year break from the NFL, because before that, my first 5 years in the field covered the Bears in Chicago, the Lions in Detroit. And not to bore you with too many details, but I just kind of wanted to get back to stories and take a little break and find the right time to get back on the right kind of team and the right kind of setup. And just intrigued by this Colts team, just the personalities they have, the history of the franchise. You know, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and when I was young, when the Browns and Bengals weren't on TV, which is pretty much every postseason, the Colts became that team to kind of watch and follow and get interested in at a young age. So kind of brings a little full circle as many times as I've moved around to be back here. But excited to be back covering the NFL. Just a couple similarities between the different teams I've covered beyond being Midwestern. I've gone from covering Jay Cutler to Matthew Stafford to Carson Wentz, and it's like three polarizing quarterbacks who've all been traded, but keep starting for teams wherever they go. So kind of an interesting thing there, but I'm excited to step into this here and kind of see where it goes.
Is it sacrilege for someone from Northeast Ohio to say that they followed the Colts when they were younger?
Well, follow is different than root, but I will say when you grow up there, you have to, especially when I grew up there, I was born in 1991, Browns moved in 95, Bengals didn't make the playoffs the entire 90s. If you want to follow postseason football, you had to find a postseason team sometimes. Like, there was no other way. Browns made the playoffs in 2002 and lost the wild card game, and then as we know, the Bengals they've not won one playoff game in my entire lifetime. And the only other team I think has that in common with them is the Lions, which I went and covered. So I've been around a lot of teams that don't do things in the postseason. So the Colts for me were a team to watch growing up, from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck, and, you know, on and on.
Something to watch once things mattered again. I understand that as a lifelong Milwaukee Brewers fan. They've been in the postseason lately. But for most of my life, I would pick a team, usually whichever team felt the most like the Brewers, to cheer for in the postseason. So I do understand that. When we're talking Northeast Ohio, are we talking Cleveland area? What are we talking there?
Well, I was born in Cleveland, grew up an hour south. So I'm the Northeast Ohio thing, I used to tell people all the time I'm from Cleveland, and then it's almost like LeBron kind of brought something to the term Northeast Ohio. That's kind of how he phrased it when he came back to Cleveland the first time. And, you know, I grew up a half hour from LeBron, and he was, you know, I think I was in fifth grade when he was becoming the big deal, coming out the number one overall pick. So it's just kind of a thing that people there say who grew up in that same era as me. And, you know, I think I love sports as much as LeBron growing up. Shockingly, I was not quite as good as he was. So instead, I decided I had to do something different, decided to write about them instead. But here we are.
I have been around Nate for a couple of days now. I can tell podcast listeners who can't see him, he is not 6'9" and does not weigh 250 pounds. So
yeah, only one of those I have a chance at getting to.
And but. even then, if you were 6'9 and 250 pounds, you'd still be a long way from being LeBron. There's a lot else that goes into that. So we're gonna do a little thing to introduce you here, and we could go through the obvious things, but I think the best way to do this is to kind of ask you some questions that fit this podcast and fit some of the recurring jokes and recurring themes on this podcast. So we're going to start out, this is a football podcast, this is a Colts podcast, so we're going to start out with, give me your football hot take.
Well, funny you ask, because this kind of goes back to what I was saying about growing up watching the Colts, and I swear I'm not saying this just to make people like me, because in fact it's kind of setting up bad expectations for myself, but my hottest take for a long time in the NFL has been that Peyton Manning is the GOAT of the NFL. It's not Tom Brady. It's Peyton Manning. And that's something I used to argue a lot with friends in college when I was at the University of Missouri. Fans came from all over the country. As we've kind of gone on, it's like that argument has been harder to make, obviously, with the rings counting up. And my argument used to be about, you know, Belichick. Well, now Tom Brady's in Tampa Bay and doing it somewhere else. But to me, same reason, going back to LeBron, same reason I would argue that LeBron is the GOAT of the NBA and not Michael Jordan, is that there's a difference between greatest and most accomplished. It's not about just counting up rings. It's about how you change the sport on a fundamental level. To me, Peyton Manning always did that more than Tom Brady. When you separate all the other factors, four Super Bowls with four different head coaches as far as getting there, and just kind of the way he introduced the audibles and everything, to me, that defines GOAT in ways that Tom Brady, as many rings as he wins, will not be able to do unless he gets into that realm. So I don't know if we want to end the podcast here or not, but that's about the best I can do.
Yeah, add. Nate just going in here right now and just trying to ingratiate himself to Colts fans. Just right off the bat, I have not weighed in on this at all, but that's just like, to me, that's just a blatant plea for everyone's hearts out there. I respect it. I respect going.
I've had a few weeks to come up with something here that could get me some goodwill. I think when I get critical on this team, I'll just have to like bring that up. Hey, don't hate me too much, because remember my hot take on the GOAT.
Oh, I think most Colts fans will be happy when you get critical. But yes, no, the going with that right away. I think that's a pretty good start to the podcast for you. My hot take would be that I like defense more than offense. Which
wow.
is
holding on.
Podcast listeners know that. Podcast listeners know that I'm far more obsessed with defense than I am with offense.
Maybe you should be covering a team like the Bears. Like when I got there, all they believed in was defense. Instead, you're covering the wrong franchise where it's been like offense forever.
I just think it's more fun. I think it's more fun to watch. Part of it is probably because I was more of a defensive player in high school. But
what position?
I was outside linebacker / strong safety. It was a hybrid defense because I played in Wisconsin, so we would play the wishbone, and every once in a while I would play a team that might go three wide, and if they went three wide, I would either play strong safety or line up in the slot.
What's interesting about that is I played hybrid outside linebacker defensive end.
Oh, okay.
Because, yeah, we had the same kind of idea flip-flopped, is that in rural Northeast Ohio, teams ran all the time, you know, but when they would get into passing sets, I'd kind of move down on the defensive end and, you know, wreak havoc there as best I can, which was not that great, but it worked.
Yeah, so I'm mostly obsessed with the pass rush, which this year has been rough. It's been rough for this team. But okay, so moving on to a couple other questions.
My favorite position is cornerback. So
okay,
I guess it's a little similar in that sense. Not too out there.
Okay, so moving on, just a couple more questions just to get them to know you, and like I said, just kind of honor the history of this podcast. Movie guy or prestige TV guy?
Definitely more of a movie guy. I would not classify myself as a buff of either. I don't have deep knowledge of either, partly because I just watch so much live sports that some things have to fall on the wayside. But I will say I'm more into kind of knocking out a movie where you can knock it out in 3 hours than committing to a TV show. So I'm so far behind on TV, but my brother's does a lot of directing over in Chicago. He has a TV show he's been trying to get off the ground. And so we don't have very much in common. We've always connected over movies when we do hang out. So that's definitely closer to me.
Okay. Favorite movie, or I will allow you a top five.
Oh, boy. My favorite movie is Inception.
Okay.
I when I like to watch stuff, I like stuff that really kind of trips you up in the head and get your mind spinning. And I'm also someone, it just was always personal to me because I am a horrible sleeper. I sleepwalk.
Because people have been in your dreams before and taken stuff.
Yes. And I don't think Inception helped that, actually. I think that probably just furthered it, you know. But it made me just kind of lean into it, you know. You know, when I'm messed up when I sleep, and that's okay. There's an entire movie about it, and it's awesome.
Gotcha. Okay, so another one that this has come up before on this podcast. Jim and I had a very different view on holidays in general. So are you pro holiday or
anti-holiday? I'm not a monster, so I'm pro holiday. I mean, that's bizarre to me that that's the dividing line here. I mean, that's like asking, are you pro candy? Are you?
Oh, but it's not with Jim. Jim is very, very anti-holiday. He claims to like them, but he only likes them for like a day.
I am
much more of a Christmas is a season type of person. Mm-hmm.
Well, I like them for the time that they're in, and you know, it can go on too long. I just like the way it shifts. I like Thanksgiving season. I like Halloween season. I like Christmas season, and you know, even though we're working here all the time, but it's fun. It's just fun to kind of, especially in the Midwest here, and especially when it gets cold and you're trying to differentiate some things when it's dark outside. I love that part of it. But I will say that Christmas is how much you love Christmas in the moment has to do with the age you're at, the kids that are around. And I'm guessing, as you said, you're pro holiday. I'm guessing part of that's that you have kids at home and Christmas is so much more fun there.
It's part of that, but also I come from a family that has always been very, very like Christmas season. We always kind of did a whole bunch of stuff around that. Having kids now, it's fun to sort of pass that along more than it is something new. I'm more passing along a love of the holiday and of the season to my kids. So we're going to get started like right away. We have Newfields tickets for like the day before Thanksgiving, and nice. You know, we'll do the lights at the fairgrounds. We'll do a bunch of different stuff here before we get to Christmas. Very upset with the NFL schedule makers.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Very upset with the NFL schedule makers.
Not only a game, but a road game in Arizona.
Yes, not happy. Just not great. Not great for somebody who likes Christmas. I had somehow managed to go 10 years covering college and NFL football without this happening. I think I had a Christmas Eve game once, but I was able to just finish the Christmas Eve game and then head at the time to my wife's parents and was still there on Christmas morning. So I just warning the podcast listeners that week the podcast may be a very angry, upset podcast. I'm not going to be happy that week.
We're gonna have the Grinch come out that week. Last time I covered the NFL was with the Lions, and they play Thanksgiving every year. And actually, as someone who loves Thanksgiving, that was a decent setup because they would cook us a humongous feast. It was like you would have to get there at like 9 a.m. or you'd like run out of food. So you're eating your green beans and mashed potatoes at 9 a.m. But also we got the whole weekend then to celebrate Thanksgiving. And so it made it a holiday instead of one day. It made it like this extravaganza. So I kind of miss that aspect to it.
I do not want to cover a game on Thanksgiving. I'm sure it will happen at some point with the Colts. I would prefer not to. My brother lives here in Fishers, so he lives like 7 minutes away from me. So we have our Traegers out, and we smoke the turkey, and we've got a whole thing going. So I really hope that they don't ever do this to us. They almost went for the trifecta this year with Halloween, a game on Halloween and a game on Christmas Day. Came real close. If they had put a game on Thanksgiving, I don't know what I would have done. I'd maybe gone to a press conference and kicked Roger Goodell in the shin. I don't know.
I think you'd warm up to it if you had that set up. I hear your complaints.
Okay, so we're going to combine those two. Favorite Christmas movie?
The most fun is definitely Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
That's the one my family will watch every single year, usually on Christmas Eve. And it's just like, it's one of those that, it's a rare comedy that like just makes us laugh all the time.
You
like
see
every time
Clark?
You watch it. It is. What's that?
You serious, Clark?
Serious, Clark. Yeah, I know. I can. We go through all the lines, and it's like even when you know they're coming, they hit, and it's still really good. Mm-hmm. So, what about you?
Well, my Christmas movie is my favorite Christmas movie is also my favorite movie. It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite movie.
Man, you podcast, are big into Christmas.
Podcast listeners know this. I will defend It's a Wonderful Life to the death.
It's a great one.
I think it gets a a mistaken rep where it's like supposed to, where people act like it's very schmaltzy and it's actually about a man who's contemplating suicide. I think it's a much better movie.
It's more than one
realize.
Scene.
Yeah, I think it's much better than people realize. Podcast listeners know this. Jim and I have gone back and forth on the Christmas movie thing before.
Well, if he only believes in Christmas as one day, I mean, that's not a lot of time to even watch movies. So he probably hasn't watched very many.
That's fair. Jim also likes to throw Die Hard in there. Just because there's Christmas stuff in it, which I'm
that's
I'm on
when
the
you know
opposite.
You're a Christmas troll.
I'm yes, yeah, see, that's what I said. I'm on the opposite side of that. One last question, just to for again, this is for podcast listeners who know this will matter more in March and April. But your thoughts on the movie Draft Day?
I mean, I'm from Cleveland, so I think you know where I'm going to stand on this. That movie is fun.
Oh, I don't. People from Cleveland, I have no idea. You might hate it because it's not
good.
No,
it taps into our soul. That movie is fun as hell. That movie is like, it is the right level of corny and cheesy. If they made that better, if they made it sharper and all this like serious stuff, I don't think it would have gotten into just kind of the comical, outrageous nature of the draft when you step back and look at it. And I think some people here in Indianapolis, at least, you know, with having the combine here, I mean, that just adds to it too. We have a whole week where we're like watching people, you know, bench press and they're getting every arm and hand length and all that stuff measured. But where I grew up, and we talked about like when you would have to have a postseason team, I mean, the whole idea of that is like you're talking draft in like October. That like that is the beacon of hope for a team that like needs everything. And so but more than that, I mean, I just thought that movie, if you're gonna look at that, the movie snobs do not like it. You know, I've got friends who are like that who like my Kobe of the Lions beat walked out in the middle of it. But he is like, he doesn't look at movies as like a fun entertainment thing. It's more of like this, it's got to be this masterpiece. But my brother, who's a director, loves that movie because he also is from that area and understands what it's tapping into. And I think if you're an NFL fan, especially football fan, or just someone who likes to be entertained, that it hits that spot.
It for me, it's the perfect type of movie. It's like Point Break or Rocky IV or something like that, where it's so ludicrous that it just tickles me to death. Mm-hmm. It makes it more rewatchable all the time. There's a lot of stuff I love about it. Podcast listeners know this. I start quoting it a ton towards the draft. I will probably tweet Vontae Mack no matter what on every morning of every Colts draft. Yes. So there we go. We're basically 3 for 3, I think, on this. So let's move
downhill
it.
From here.
You guys know Nate a little bit now, so we'll move into some Colts talk here. You're coming in as an outsider who hasn't been embedded in the team as long as I have, or as long as a lot of the fans have. What's your impression of the team so far?
Yeah, this is an interesting team. Like pretty much, you could say about the entire AFC is I feel like there's just this roller coaster between teams understanding whether they're really good or whether they're really flawed, and maybe that's just the reality of the AFC. So you've got this team here in the Colts that have stars on both sides of the ball. Whether it's Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner on defense, Jonathan Taylor, and now we're seeing the rise of Michael Pittman on offense, and yet so many different other areas that can bring them down on a week-to-week basis. And so how do they go in within the season that's very up and down and parity-driven? How do they find an identity and ride that and create something out of that? And I think the closest – they're about as close as I think – to getting there without being there as you can in the sense of like the run game right now. I mean, that thing has gone taken way off to the point where having listened to this podcast, I know one of the big, you know, argumentative points is like, do they run the ball enough? And that's part of that is how much are they creating that identity? But Jonathan Taylor is unbelievable to watch. I'm not sure I go entirely as far as you did when you said he's the best running back in the NFL, but there's absolutely a case for that. And he's definitely, It's hard to say one person's definitely better than him right now, the way he's playing, but also just the way that the whole thing is building. And it's interesting to watch because not many teams in the NFL want to commit resources and time and effort and energy to the run game. The teams that have, though, some of those have really, really done well. The Browns and the Ravens do that, and it's a mix of 11 men coming together to create this system that carries week to week against any opponent, and it's capped off by a ball carrier who's just electrifying, who can run away from the defense. It's Nick Chubb for the Browns, it's Lamar Jackson for the Ravens, and Jonathan Taylor now for the Colts. And so I'm curious to see how much they lean into that, because Frank Reich, you know, former backup quarterback in the league, the guy who brought Carson Wentz here, you know, he's always going to have that temptation to throw. There's that's kind of the drug that's in the mind of most offensive coordinators, and there's balance is very important. But I'm just curious to see how much they ride and develop this identity, obviously while trying to avoid getting anyone hurt.
I think it's an interesting debate. I tend to come down on the side of what Reich said last week, which is, you know, balance, people think of it as 50-50, but really in the NFL now, balance is more like 60-40 or 55-45. That's just analytically speaking. If you're doing the things like you don't run too much on second and long, you need to throw it on first down, that kind of thing, it's going to be hard to go truly 50-50. Just the way games are called. And most teams don't do that. But I do think that this team, it's been interesting to see, some of the other guest hosts have also brought this up. But it's been interesting to see the debate around that, because the Colts are in the top half of the league in terms of run-pass ratio, how much they run the ball. If the situation calls for it, they're going to run it. It's just that sometimes the situation doesn't call for it. And I think that that's probably something that people don't think about as much. Some people don't agree with it. Some people know this stuff and don't agree with the idea that you don't run very often on second and long. You don't run as much on first. I shouldn't say you don't run as much. The Colts are generally, if you throw out, you know, two-minute drills, that kind of thing, they're usually a little bit above 50% running the ball on first down. I think there's some people who would like to see them force the run a little bit more and run in some situations that are more pass heavy. But generally, the point of analytics and understanding all that stuff is that over the big sample size, yes, individual plays will not go the way you want them to, but in the long run, from an overarching perspective, it's going to be better for the team going forward.
Yeah, and it's also something I think you have to judge season long, because, and this is a little different because the Colts play their home games in a dome, but road games in December are going to be different than road games in September, and that's where you're going to need that run game even more. But you don't want to get to a point where, like the Titans are at, where they don't have Derrick Henry for those cold weather moments. This is why, like, a lot of the analytics heavy front offices, which happen to run the Browns and Ravens I just mentioned, they will limit certain players, those star players, getting touches when it seems like, well, why are you not giving them the ball? Because they want to have them available in those other moments. I think that's gone on with Jonathan Taylor. It's also the style of plays that guys get the ball. I mean, they're starting to, you know, Jonathan Taylor's been such a great receiver that there are ways to get him the ball that are not just throwing him into the teeth of linebackers, and it can kind of be a healthier version of doing that. So it's just something I want to see develop over the course of the season. I mean, they had to get the run game together and on, you know, to this level of 11-on-11 and well-oiled machine before you really lean into it. But the other thing that's always going to be out there that I just don't think the common fan is always thinking about is that when you throw the ball, you get a lot of cheapies. You can get roughing the passer. You can get pass interference. There are ways to kind of bail out an offense that's struggling.
Oh, Colts fans are very aware of the pass interference thing this year.
Yeah. But it's like the run game just is harder because of that. You know, it's like the best you can hope for is that the occasional face mask might happen once a game, or what, defensive holding, that doesn't happen on run play. So it's like you're just making it, you know, you've got to have enough balance to throw it in order to take some of those shots. And then maybe the idea is if you get, you know, because pass interference is a spot foul, that gets you down, you know, to the 1 or the 2 yard line, then you can run it in. And so it may not look that way in a box score, but I think this is the way that offense coordinators are thinking about it.
One of the interesting things that's for me in the second half is going to be what happens as teams, and I think they've been doing this already, but what happens as teams react to the Colts have more than 123 rushing yards in 5 of their last 6 games. Taylor, obviously the big plays. I think most defensive coordinators are going to go into it. He's got the two longest runs in the NFL this year. He's got the longest catch by a running back in the NFL this year. Coordinators are going to start going, we can't give up the explosive play, if they haven't been doing that already. I think they've been doing that to some degree already, especially like the Tennessee game. I noticed a lot of very packed in boxes. And it's going to be interesting to see what teams do down the stretch and what they emphasize. Because so one of the things that happens with this team is this team runs a lot of RPO. I'm going to write about this in a story that I'll post tomorrow. or if you're listening to this, the story that I'll post Friday morning, if you're listening to it Friday afternoon, it'll already be up. But this team runs a lot of RPO, and when they call that, they're thinking run. But if a team plays run, it becomes a pass. And so that it's going to be interesting to see if more of those RPOs turn into passes down the second half of the season here, just because teams are so worried about getting caught with the lightning bolt from Taylor. And the interesting thing about that to me is this is an offense that has shown an ability to get down the field and have explosive plays in the passing game. And the more teams try to take away the explosive run by Taylor, they're going to open themselves up to the explosive pass, which we've seen this team do. So I think the offense feels like it's in a good point, a good spot to me at the halfway point. We'll probably get into the Carson Wentz stuff, I think, on another podcast. I think I would sum it up to just say, I think he's for the most part, he's helped this team outside of the Tennessee game. For the most part, he's and some stretches, both Tennessee games, but for the most part, he's been an asset to this offense. He's added something to it that they didn't have. The RPO stuff is stuff that Phillip Rivers couldn't really do the same way. And so he's added something to the offense. I think he's playing pretty well. I would not say that he's playing like an elite quarterback, but I don't really understand why people are framing it from that discussion point.
Yeah. We just get too much of, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson shoved down your throat that it becomes a very all or nothing approach to quarterbacks. And if a guy is not like, yeah, there's all this discussion of do you pay a guy like Carson went through in Philadelphia and Jared Goff and all this, and it becomes this idea, Jimmy Garoppolo is going through this, where it's like you're either incredible or you're not it. And there's going to be a middle ground, because not every team is going to have one of those top five quarterbacks, because there's obviously only five for a reason. But the interesting thing to me, just going back to the run game a little bit, and you talk about the explosives, is it, you know, coming here, and I've been here 2 days at the facility, and the main thing I feel like I've been looking for is just T.Y. Hilton watch as he's working back from a concussion. And, you know, he's had obviously such a tough season. He's getting up in age, and it almost feels like Jonathan Taylor came just a little bit too late for T.Y. Hilton, because that guy used to just fly down the field and kill you with the deep ball. And it's like now they have a quarterback in Carson Wentz. They didn't have this with Phillip Rivers or Jacoby Brissett, but they got a quarterback in Carson Wentz who will go down the field and who will work play action and bomb the ball, and he's aggressive.
Well, and the way he throws it too. So one of the biggest problems with Rivers was that Rivers had to throw kind of a hard, flat ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't have the arm strength anymore to throw the big rainbow. And T.Y. is really unbelievable tracking the football. And so I think that was, in retrospect, having seen T.Y., I mean, it's been a very, very limited amount. But the one deep ball that they did connect on this season against Houston, T.Y. is an unbelievable tracker of the football. He's like an outfielder or something mm-hmm. like that, where he can get to it. Rivers didn't give him a chance to do that because of the way he had to throw those balls down the field. Wentz has the ability, like Wentz's deep ball is a very high deep ball, and he throws it in a way that he's giving the receiver a chance to run under it. And I think that's it, because T.Y. can still get open. He does some stuff, whether or not he's lost a step, he does some stuff that nuances the game that can get him open deep. And I think that maybe the one thing missing from this offense has been they don't have that second receiving option behind Pittman that they can count on. Zach Pascal has not been the same this year. But you're right. I think Wentz specifically, Hilton kind of lost 2 years there to a guy who wouldn't throw the ball down the field and then a guy who couldn't throw it down the field the way he needed to. And it probably hurts Hilton that he's going through this injury plague season when he's finally got a quarterback who can give him the kind of ball he can run under.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, when you talk about teams trying to take away the explosive runs of Jonathan Taylor and they start stacking the box, I mean, that is the ultimate pivot, is to go play action deep ball to a guy streaking down the field. That's why these speed receivers last forever in the NFL. We're seeing T.Y. Hilton, he's still going to have value as long as he can be on the field. You look around, Ted Ginn had a long career, Darius Heyward-Bey, DeSean Jackson is still getting signed by teams. These guys that can make you defend every blade of grass, and if you don't, they just go play action over the top to them. I mean, that will sustain, that kind of element would sustain Jonathan Taylor and make this a really lethal offense. I think that's kind of the next step for this offense from what I've seen with how well they're running the ball. The question is, can T.Y. get out there? Can he stay on the field? Can he be that guy again? And that's what I'm really curious to see.
I think that it's been a fairly explosive offense from a 40-yard pass thing. I think maybe more than anything, they need to be a little more efficient. But I really don't have very many concerns about the offense. If you take away the first three games, they've been really good. Something clicked there. And I think we've talked about it, I've talked about it in this podcast a lot, about we probably should have expected that. It's a new quarterback, new offense. You don't really – you can think a lot about what you want to do, but you don't know until you actually have guys on the field playing together. I think my largest concern for this team going into the second half of the season here is just the defense, the pass defense specifically. The run defense is either first or second or whatever in run DVOA. The traditional numbers don't fit that as well, but this is a team that's going to stop the run. It always has been under Eberflus. They're always going to make life hard on opponents running games. They haven't gotten the pass rush or the play in the secondary to keep teams from completing a lot of passes and racking up yards and points and doing all that kind of thing. And we've seen some good stuff from Rock Ya-Sin. Isaiah Rogers feels like he's maybe improving a little bit, but they've just got Xavier Rhodes hasn't played well. He's still hurt. We didn't see him out there today.
And so many safety issues.
They don't have Julian Blackman or Kari Willis. They didn't have depth there before. Now it's Andrew Sandejo and George Odom. They have not played great. That might be understating it a bit. I think that's my biggest concern going into the back half of this. I really do think this offense, over the whole of this back half of the season, is going to put up points and yards. My question is, when they get in these games against good quarterbacks, can they stop them? I don't know that we've seen that from them in the first half of the season. And they've got them coming up. It's Josh Allen and Tom Brady and Kyler Murray, but it's also Derek Carr, who's had good games against this team in the past, good games against this defense in the past. The defense, to me, I think, is what's going to make or break this chance they might have to stay in the AFC playoff picture.
Yeah, I think getting more safety is becoming a very overlooked position, from fans and in media. But it seems like one of those things that teams realize, like, you realize how important safety is when you don't have it. And that's kind of where I think the Colts are right now. When you have it to get down to, Sandejo, and that just is not where you want to live in this kind of a league, especially when you play in a dome. You, like, look at the last two teams that won the Super Bowl. They kind of got that next level. They took away teams killing them because they got a safety that year. Tyrann Mathieu with the Chiefs and Antoine Winfield Jr. with the Buccaneers. And so I would have to think going forward, that's got to be a position that they're seeing now, like, wow, this we built a lot of things on this team, a lot of things on this defense. Got a lot of impressive, talented players, whether it's Kwity Paye, Darius Leonard, or DeForest Buckner. Not only they have to fix the secondary, obviously, but safety, if you don't have it at safety, I mean, you're going to get burned all the time. And so that's just kind of the world they're living in right now. If it's going to be injury related, I mean, that, you can only do so much about that. The trade deadline has already passed. I think the answer for them, the closest thing to an answer for them, the situation they're in right now, is how does a guy like Kwity Paye grow and become that pass rusher who is not just getting, a few pressures, but not just setting the edge, but who actually starts getting at the quarterback and getting home. They've got to get a better pass rush. That's where they've invested. They have resources. They've got guys who are out there on the field, reasonably healthy. Those are the guys who are going to have to step up and kind of save the back end a little bit more.
Yeah, Kwity Paye is going to be interesting to watch here this week and the next couple of weeks, because he really probably turned – well, not probably. He turned in his best game as a pass rusher against the Jets last week. A lot of pressures, no sacks, but a lot of pressures, a lot of altered throws. He's a guy this Colts team really likes. They really like the way he learns. We all kind of knew he was going to take a little while. At Michigan, they just didn't ask him to rush the passer the way you rush in the NFL.
They were lining him up over the nose sometimes.
Yeah, and you line him up in a crab stance, and he's supposed to read and react. He's not attacking. I wrote about this back in training camp, but they've elongated his stance. They've made him more into a defensive end. And the sort of a classic 4-3 defensive end. And the Jets game gave you a lot of hope that he's starting to figure it out and that there are sacks coming. And now the thing is, can he build on it? Is he going to continue to do that? For the long-term health of this team, the best thing that could happen to them, I think, in the back half of the season is that Kwity Paye and Dayo Odenbo look like they can be starters and starting caliber pass rushers in the NFL. This is the... To me, even more so than the secondary, I think that's the thing that makes this defense that this defense is missing is that complete pressure. They've gone through 2018. They had to use blitzes because they didn't have the personnel. 2019, they had edge pressure, but nothing up the middle. 2020, they get Buckner, so they have a ton of interior pressure. They don't have anything on the edge. This year, Buckner has been double-teamed and triple-teamed, and he's not really having the same kind of dominant season he had last year. And he also still doesn't have the edge pressure. And so at some point, they need to have a complete pass rush. It doesn't matter really what the scheme is if you can't get a pass rush going. And they haven't been able to do it here consistently. So those rookies, I mean, Odengbo is going to be tough. He's coming off an Achilles tear. He's going to play. He has to play after Tyquan Lewis's injury. But it's going to be tough for him coming off of that. We're going to have to see what happens with this team going forward. And what happens with those two guys going forward, I think, is maybe one of the most important things for this team long term down the back half of this season. This Jaguars team coming up, we're going to do just a little bit here on the Jaguars. They're coming off a 9-6 win over Buffalo. That's the sort of attention-getting win that a coach can use. But, yep, I don't think that it's necessarily a game that you worry about. I mean, if you're a fan, if you're a coach or a player, you need to. But I think if you're a fan, you kind of look at it as a one-off. It's the same thing that just happened with the Jets. They were coming off a win over the Bengals, and they go and, you know, look more like themselves against the Colts. The Colts run up and down the field on them, on their defense. I think Jaguars are sort of the same. So one of the things about their win over Buffalo I was reading after that game was they played two safeties high, essentially dared Buffalo to run it, took the big play away from Josh Allen. And we all kind of know, because it's been the storyline of this season, is the way to get teams out of that is to run the football. Well, Buffalo's terrible at it. Buffalo does not have a running game outside of Allen making plays with his feet. And so I don't know that the Jaguars can use the same strategy that worked against Buffalo to do anything against the Colts, because the Colts have the running back running game to take them out of that, to make them pay for that too high shell. So from that perspective, it just seems like from a 10,000 feet perspective, it doesn't seem like what they did against Buffalo is going to work against the Colts, because you're just opening yourself up to Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, overall in the season, the Jaguars have stopped the run pretty well. They're top 10 in DVOA and yards per carry allowed. And I think the number that is most encouraging for them in this matchup is that they've allowed 0 40-yard runs and only 2 runs of over 20 yards. So they are that team that's taken away the explosive plays, making you go, you know, 3-4 yards at a time. I don't think they've faced as many backs, you know, in the stratosphere as Jonathan Taylor. And last week's a good example is that the Bills, not only do they not run well, but they don't believe in it. And the Bills will go to Cole Beasley and kind of makeshift run game through the slot before they'll actually traditionally run the ball. The Colts, I don't think, are going to live in that world the same way. And so it'll be a nice matchup, though, this run game that's just kind of taken off like crazy with the Jaguars defense, you know, with Malcolm Brown in the middle and with Miles Jack there kind of running around and stopping things, and just kind of see where that breaks. But I think the Colts are just much more balanced, and you'd like to think more patient than the Josh Allen Bills in order to just kind of stay the course. If it's not working the first quarter, let this develop and let it build and grind them down, knowing as long as their defense lets them play that way. And if it's if it's anything like a 9-6 game, they'll be able to do it that way. I just think the Bills lost a lot of patience and were almost rattled by the fact that this Jaguars team was even putting them in this spot, and they just didn't react very well.
Well, and like you said, Buffalo doesn't care about the run. It's been a recurring theme with Buffalo over the last couple of years. The Colts, under Reich, they're going to run the ball. They always are. It's been weird that we've been talking about how much they run the ball, because that's not, like, if you look at it from a league-wide perspective over the last 4 years, it just doesn't fit. This team, essentially starting about halfway through the Andrew Luck season, has been a team that runs the football and is committed to it. So you expect them to stick with it. One of the things that's interesting about Jacksonville, I don't have their DVOA numbers run defense wise offhand, but I'd be interested to see them because if you look at their schedule,
eighth in DVOA,
eighth in rush defense. Yep. Okay. One of the things that interests me is that they really haven't played good running attacks other than Derrick Henry, who they gave up 180 yards to. It's a lot of teams that are in the bottom half of the league in running. Some of them that are at the very bottom. And so I don't know that they've been, like you mentioned this, but I don't know if they've been stressed outside of that Tennessee game by a running game like the one they're about to see. You know, the Colts are now a top five rushing attack. I don't know if they've been stressed the same way. It'll be interesting to see what that happens. And the other side is the other side of this is their passing numbers are terrible defensively. And this is an offense that's capable. It's capable of making teams pay who are bad in pass defense. And so it's going to be – to me, it's – I know the Jaguars beat Buffalo last week, and obviously I think Frank Reich can use that as a way to not overlook a Jacksonville team that's given the Colts trouble sometimes inexplicably for like a decade and a half now. but I think from my perspective, not being in the team, this is still – it's still the Jaguars. And regardless of what they did last week, this is still the Jaguars.
Yeah, and a divisional opponent will know that better than, you know, a team like Buffalo that might have gotten a little high and mighty as one of the few teams in the AFC that was actually starting to look like they were going to pull away. But, yeah, I think they're catching them, the Jaguars at the right time, not only because they're on the radar more with this upset, but also the fact that they're coming off the mini bye. And if we're talking about it's going to be kind of a tough battle between a rush offense and a rush defense, that extra 3 days of rest or whatever they got, as long as they can get Braden Smith back, that's going to be pretty key for the Colts. And I think as far as attacking the Jaguars through the air, they are incredibly vulnerable. And really what you have to do is you have to be able to handle the Jaguars' Josh Allen, their edge rusher who runs like a deer and can really mess some things up and get after the ball. If you have a good plan for him, if you're aware of him, if you really dedicate your resources to that guy, they don't have enough other places to go in order to mess you up. And that's why it's inexplicable to me that the Bills – They had no plan for that Josh Allen and just got wrecked. And that's a little bit of their flaws. Their offensive line's still not incredible. But I have a feeling that a divisional opponent, and especially coming off the game that Josh Allen just had, that Frank Reich will have a better plan for that. If they take him away, I've got to think that the mix of Jonathan Taylor, a fresher offensive line, and Michael Pittman and what they've got going at home, that should be enough to beat this kind of Jaguars team. And if it's not, then that'll tell us a lot about what kind of a contender the Colts are.
It feels like the Colts offensive line has played a lot more like the Colts offensive line is supposed to play since they got Julian Davenport out of the lineup and went to Matt Pryor. Smith or Pryor, they've been pretty successful there. Wentz has taken a lot of sacks, but I think he's at 17 for the season right now, which it's not great, but it's also much better than he was at last year. It's a much better pace than he was on last year when he took 50 in 12 games. So it'll be interesting to see what they do against Josh Allen. I think this game is obviously not quite as interesting as the ones coming up with Buffalo and Tampa Bay, but I want to see, again. I'm going to be watching Pay, watching the defense, seeing if they can get more pass rush. I think that's where we're going to wrap this first Nate and Joel edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast up. If you're not following Nate, follow him on Twitter at
Nate Atkins _.
Get used to it. We're going to have stories coming out every week. And then this week, for the first time, Nat does not have to do the First Impressions podcast in about 2 months. Mm-hmm. It'll be me and Nate here. And we'll see what happens after this Jaguars game. So thanks for listening. If you have not given Nate a warm welcome, reach out and give him a warm welcome. And we will be going forward in the second half of this season watching this Colts team.